The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
It is time for another big issue debate with a view to general election 2024 polling day tomorrow week. We have looked at the issues of housing and infrastructure and cost of living. Today we are looking at crime and justice. Helen McEntee is with me, Minister for Justice, Fine Gael candidate Meath East. Jim O'Callaghan is Fianna Fáil's justice spokesperson and a candidate for the party in Dublin Bay South. Padraig Tobin is the leader of AIM2 and is running in Meath West. Dathi Doolan is the Sinn Féin candidate, Dublin South Central. You're all very, very welcome. Thanks a million.
Thank you very much.
For coming in to us. We might start then with migration. Minister, were you to be returned to government and find yourself in the same ministerial position that you're in today, how would you improve or reform the asylum process?
Well, firstly, what we need to do is more of what has been done in the last 2.5 years. So we've gone from a situation, I think most people know this at this stage, where we've had 3,000 or 4,000 people a year coming in seeking international protection. To this year, we might have close to 20,000 people. And so in that short space of time, we've had to ramp up the system. So we've gone from processing 3,000 or 4,000 applications to this year, there'll be 14,000. And next year, there's already plans in place that would allow us to process up to 25,000 applications. So the way to have a system that's efficient and effective, that gives people their answers quickly if they're entitled to stay here, and again, if they're not, that they get that quickly and that they leave quickly, it's by making sure that the system works, that they get those answers quickly. So I've ramped
quickly?
Up. So, well, we went through a situation many, many, many years ago where people were waiting years, and I'm talking 4, 5, 6 years. At the moment, about 50% of applications get their first answer in less than 3 months. That's because I have applied an accelerated process to people coming from safe countries, people who already have asylum elsewhere, or people coming from the highest number of applications. So Jordan and Nigeria, those two countries at the moment. So by applying that system, not only are we getting answers much more quickly, but for many of those countries, and in some instances, we've seen the number of people coming from those countries drop by about 80%. So it's about getting answers more quickly, but also it's acting as a deterrent, because what we've seen with many of those people is that, unfortunately, they're using the international protection system as an economic way into this country. Now, we have legal migration, and it's really important to stress that migration is good for this country. But often the two get intertwined. And as recently as yesterday, I was on the doors talking to someone and they said, we have hundreds of thousands of people coming in here through the international protection system. We're not doing anything about it. But when you break it down, yes, we have thousands of people coming here every year through legal routes. They're working in this country. They're contributing. You then have other people coming seeking international protection. And many of them now contributing, working, making their way and getting that access to our communities and settling down and being part of the community. So the best way to have an immigration system that's firm but fair, that gives people the support if they need it, and make sure that if they don't, that they have to leave, is by making sure the system processes applications quickly. And if somebody doesn't have a right to be here, and we have to be very clear on that, that they're either assisted to leave, and that's actually the most efficient and effective way that you can remove a person. You buy them a plane ticket, you put them on the plane and off home they go. If it gets to the point where they have to be deported, then you physically remove them. And obviously, we need to do more work in that regard.
What percentage of deportation orders are followed through with an actual deportation? Do we know? Do we have that data?
Well, it is a relatively small number. I mean, deportation orders signed in the last year alone have gone up by about 160%. Enforced deportations are a small percentage of that, because actually voluntary returns account for a huge amount. So there's about 840 people this year have left the state, many of them voluntarily. Now, that's not a shake of the hand and a wave goodbye. They're bought plane tickets and they're sent home. It's quicker, it's easier, it's more efficient.
840 represent what percentage of those who are ordered to leave the state?
It's about half. It's about half, but you also have people
who... So half melt away?
Well, no, you have people who leave who don't engage with the system. So people who leave, and we do signs of life checks. So you check, are people on social welfare? Are they getting any form of benefits? Are they looking for housing? And you can generally get a sense if somebody is here or not, because it's very difficult, no matter what you say, to live in this country without any form of support or without any type of checks.
So what's the working figure that your officials rely on in terms of trying to understand how many people do melt away into the system?
Well, you look at the number of deportation orders that are signed, and to be honest, it doesn't always get to that point. People, if they get a negative decision, often decide to leave themselves. You imagine this and put yourselves in this situation.
But what's the figure? You're 10, 15, 20%? Well, what's
It can vary, and this is the thing that people have to understand. Trends change, and when I first came into the department, we had a huge amount of people coming through our ports and our airports, people who were coming without documentation, false documentation, seeking asylum. In response to that, what we've done is more doorstop operations, so people getting off the plane being checked by border control. We have more liaison officers in other countries. We've ramped up our border control.
Yeah, we'll talk about those border controls
What I'm trying to say is that because of that, it's actually reduced the number of people coming through our ports and airports.
So flows happen and change and you have to respond. So basically, this is one of the biggest frustrations in the country at the moment. The government have been absolutely asleep at the wheel in relation to this. So there are very valid questions that you ask. So 98 people out of 1,750 last year who received deportation orders were actually had that deportation order enforced. 650 of those people had what's called a voluntary deportation. When I've asked the Minister for Justice before, can she check have those individuals left the country? She said she cannot confirm if those individuals have left the country. And I have a PQ here that shows that answer. That's an incredible situation that we have only 5% of the people who've received deportation orders actually being deported.
That's the 98 figure.
That's the 98.
650 though left.
No, we don't know that. Because the minister stated it. I'll read the parliamentary question that I have here. Hold on one second. The minister confirms to me in this parliamentary question that there isn't checks leaving the country. And the reason why there isn't checks leaving the country is because we have a border with the north
because
of Ireland.
We have an open border, Paddy. You want
exactly.
to put a border
so,
down the Irish so, no, Sea. Is this really your solution to migration? In my view,
is that we actually treat Ireland as a unit, north and south, in the same way now that we do for goods because of the Brexit issue. And that we negotiate with the Labour government in London to see can we actually come to an accommodation in these terms. It would suit the London government because flows of people often go both ways. At different times, depending on how the economy is. So that's just one figure the other point here is,
really.
And this is really key here as well. For 2 years, I asked the minister questions in relation to how people are coming in because 70-80% were actually registering at the International Protection Office in Dublin. And I thought that was strange because you'd imagine people would register at the airports or the ports. And it became clear to me that people were coming from Britain through the north into the south. Yeah. And for 2 years, Helen McEntee refused to answer that question. And she said the reason being is because we don't ask that question or the information cannot be collated. And again, we're spending hundreds of millions of euros on this process. And the government is unable to measure what's happening. And if you can't measure, you can't manage.
Let's go to Westminster and ask the Labour government to put another border in the Irish Sea.
Well, first
it's
of
very
all,
easy to say that. All have PTSD from Brexit and you want to go back.
Well, all I'm saying is that in relation to goods and the Irish Sea border for goods, people said it couldn't happen. It did happen. And the world didn't end as a result of it. And in actual fact, it is absolutely impossible for us to really control who is coming onto the island of Ireland or not if we don't have a system whereby if a person travels from London to Belfast or London to Derry. And the other option here is actually people being stopped on the border with Newry on buses and then returned to Newry to get on the bus to be stopped at Newry at the buses.
Daithí Doolan, would you put another border in the Irish Sea?
Let's be very clear that this government have normalised failure. And it did failure on housing, healthcare, childcare, and as well as the asylum seeking process. We need an asylum seeking process that's fair, it's just, it's speedy and swift. And we would triple the number of staff in a standalone agency dealing with migration. And what we need to ensure is also the number of people who have got asylum, who are locked into the direct provision because of the housing crisis. You have a very, very large number of people locked in there. That needs to be dealt with. And what we need to ensure is that this doesn't become some sort of political football. We're dealing with human beings who need to be properly and adequately treated and their cases heard justly and managed swiftly and have a right to appeal. And if they fail, they're deported in a humane fashion. What we won't entertain is it's been turned into some sort of political football. We need to also agree that migration is a good thing for Ireland. The biggest cause of migration is the EU. I'm not leaving the EU anytime soon. It has contributed to our economy, our the healthcare, the hotel industry. Is all there's staff there from all over the world working there, and they're welcome to do so. But this government and consecutive governments have absolutely broken the system that's in place, and we need a change. The people want change. There's anger out there. There's frustration out there. I hear it every day on the doorsteps. I hear it in our communities long before the election. And they need change. And we intend to change the system, radically change the system.
And radically change the system is what? Recruit some extra people.
Well, with all due respect, I didn't interrupt you, Minister. Please. What we have is, we do need to increase the staffing, absolutely, because people need their cases heard. They need to be dealt with swiftly, humanely, legally, with right to appeal. We also need to ensure that HICWA are employed to inspect the IPASS centre. There's people making a lot of money out of IPASS. There's a lot of people, private developers. Yet again, this government have privatised the whole asylum-seeking process. And the developers and the private industry are making money.
But I'm still waiting for where all this structural change
with all due respect, I did. My opening piece was, we will establish a new agency that has a whole of government approach in dealing with asylum seekers. That was my opening point. We'll triple the staffing to ensure that the applications are dealt with swiftly and progressively and dealt with accordingly. That's our promise to the Irish people on November 29th.
Jim O'Callaghan, had you been Minister for Justice for the last 4 years, how would you have dealt with this?
Well, I think I would have displayed, and I'm not saying anyone here isn't, political honesty about this issue. Like, it is a complex issue. When the history of the 21st century is written, one of the defining issues will be the issue of migration and asylum applications. And like, if we want to look at this at a higher level, obviously what needs to happen is these countries around the world which are dysfunctionally governed, and it makes you realise what a good country we have here in Ireland, that are dysfunctionally governed, they need to get their acts together and put in place democratic systems and build their economy so that their citizens aren't leaving the country. This is a debate that needs to be driven by data. Back in 2019, only 4,200 people applied for international protection. This year, up to the end of October, it's 16,600. So we have to be driven by that. And we need to recognise that it's putting a lot of pressure on the accommodation system. I think the state has done extremely well. I think the Irish people have been extremely charitable, not just in response to international protection, but also in response to Ukraine. Like, at present, we're providing accommodation for 32,645 international protection applicants. It's putting a huge amount of pressure on the system, and I think we need to be honest about that. What we need to do, I'm sorry, I commend the Minister, she's going to give out to me for saying this, but we did suggest back in 2023 that more countries should be designated as safe. And since then, we suggested designate more countries as safe. And the effect of that is that we've seen applications from those countries go down. So we need to use this procedure much more. Also, if somebody has come from a European country where they have been refused their application for asylum, they can't just go through the process again. We've won European-wide harmonisation. And similarly, if they've come from another European country and they come to Ireland and then apply, they should really be sent back to that country to make their application. So there are rules in place. The Migration Pact hasn't been read by many people. In my opinion, it is reflecting the fact that Europe needs to work more harmoniously together on this issue. We saw what happened in Brexit when the British thought that they could solve asylum applications and immigration by leaving the EU. The issue has become a bigger problem for them. So I think we need honesty and respect of it. I think we need to recognise we need to have rules in place. And one thing I'll just finish on. This system will not operate if at the end of the process, people who have been refused end up in the same process or the same system as people who have been successfully applied for international protection. There has to be a difference.
And Fianna Fáil have supported Fine Gael for over 10 years. This is the joke. There's a contrived difference here. But Fianna Fáil have continued to vote confidence in every justice minister. So they have coalesced together. With all due respect, Minister, don't cut across me, please. I didn't cut across you.
Well, you cut across Jim O'Callaghan.
Can I finish my point? That Fianna Fáil have continued to support the Fine Gael government for over 10 years now. So it's a bit rich coming in here with 8 days before the election making promises.
Jim makes an important point. What the situation is that we're spending hundreds of millions of euros to try and differentiate between those who need help and those who don't need help. And actually at least 60% that we're sure of, the actual outcome is exactly the same. And, you know, that's a crazy situation. So, like, you know, even the issue of people coming into the country without travel documents, there are still thousands of people coming in without travel documents currently.
No, there aren't. There's been a 40% drop of people coming through airports and airports.
Yes, but 5,000 people came through Dublin Airport in 2023 in relation to not having a travel document, just in Dublin itself. So, you know, we need to get to a situation whereby, absolutely, we do have a moral responsibility to help those who need help. You know, there's the issue of planning as well, which I think is very frustrating too. And because this is not just about numbers at the top level, it's also about what's happening in the communities. Now, you know, Roger O'Gorman has a situation where he defended a TD in his own government for putting in an opposition to a house because it was overlooking his window. Now, at the same time, the government is deleting the planning process for hundreds of thousands of people across the country.
Yeah.
And that is hypocritical in relation
Minister.
To that.
Look, we have Pather Tobin who wants to put a border down the Irish Sea. That's your solution to this problem now. Sorry, I'm not sure what rock you've been under for the last few years, but the idea that we'd just go to the Labour government and say, do you know what?
Would you ask?
It worked out really well for us the last few years. The blood, sweat and tears that were put into keeping the border open for everybody's benefit. The solution here is to put a border down the Irish Sea.
The Labour government?
It's absolute nonsense, that solution. I'm sorry, but I wouldn't even entertain it because that's not the solution here. We have a global issue on our hands and it's not let's go it alone or let's just draw a border down the Irish Sea. Dahi is talking about Europe and how great it is and how we're not going to walk away from them. Fianna Fáil voted against the European Pact, which is the only thing that we have to do. Sinn Féin, apologies.
Freudian slip there.
Fianna Fáil did not vote against the pact. Sinn Féin voted against the pact. And have said very clearly, well, let's go it alone. How are we going to go it alone?
No. Check, we didn't. We said it should have been seven different votes on the different sections.
It doesn't matter. You voted against the pact.
We didn't say we'd oppose in this entirety.
Can I just say on the safe countries, you know, with all due respect, Jim, you keep talking about the safe countries. Designating a country safe doesn't actually change it. What's actually made the difference is the fact that I put them into an accelerated process 2 years ago. I've then added to that list, which means more people have gone into it. And in fact, the larger number of people.
At the end of it, if they finish, they're not accelerating.
Well, sorry, when you have an
80%. So, what's the point of having accelerated pact?
Can I make a comment?
Jim O'Callaghan.
Chair, thank you very much.
When you have 80% less people coming from a country, that's what you call a result.
Jim O'Callaghan.
Okay, I disagree with what the Minister said, but I want to get to the more important point. We need to be honest. We have a difficulty in this country. We have an open border. Nobody wants to have any barriers on the border between the north and the south. So how do we deal with that? There's a mechanism in the legislation, which is a returns order. And also the UK has now been designated as a safe third country. It's the only one designated under our legislation. There's a difference between safe countries and safe third countries. We now can effect return orders to the UK. And that's obviously what we need to progress down doing. That's the method of dealing with people who have come in from the UK and should have applied there.
Obviously the solution is remove the border, have united Ireland and let us control the sea border, which is the natural border.
Yeah, that's not going to happen this week.
No, but I mean, that's our promise. On the 29th, Irish unity will be centre stage for us.
Dáithí Dúlan, Helen McEntee, Jim O'Callaghan, Pádraig Tobin are all going to stay with me back after this quick break. Helen McEntee, Jim O'Callaghan, Pádraig Tobin, Dáithí Dúlan are all still with me. Minister, we're fast approaching the anniversary of the Dublin riots and there's been a lot of talk over the last 12 months about increased Garda recruitment. It's been a painfully slow process, isn't it?
Look, it's absolutely taken longer than I would have liked or anybody, I think. The fact of the matter is we're about 1,000 Gardaí short than we should be because of COVID. The fact that the college was essentially not producing any new recruits for 2 years. We're at the stage now where last year we had the largest number of recruits than we've had since COVID. And I'm absolutely confident that we can keep moving and keep building on that. I mean, look, we're talking about what happened in the city centre last year. About 65% of our new recruits have come into Dublin city centre, acknowledging the population and the size that we have here. And even since last year, there's been a huge amount of progress in resourcing and supporting the Gardaí themselves. So there's about €9 million has been spent from last year's budget and is currently being spent in this year's budget in equipping our Gardaí and providing, whether it's the public order unit or others, more equipment, whatever they need. We have body cameras now on Gardaí in our city centre. We have water cannons being procured as well as public order vans.
Is it too unattractive a prospect to be a guard in a country with full employment? Is that the problem that you have when it comes to
recruitment?
Well,
look, I mean, we had 11,000 people applied in the last two recruitment campaigns. I mean, I meet new Gardaí all the time. I'm privileged and proud to be down at the graduations and you have people who are eager and rearing to go and want to be members of An Garda Síochána. I've met people who've come home from Australia, from other parts of the world specifically to become Gardaí. You also have people who want to work as Garda staff and we had a recruitment campaign for our Garda Reserve and in fact we had about 1,800 people applied for that. So to me it's a fantastic job and very clearly the people who are applying believe so too. It's about putting the structures in place so that we can recruit as quickly as possible. Now I believe that we've got to a certain point. We've done that by making sure we have the recruitment campaigns, getting the college back open again. I've doubled the allowance that Gardaí get when they come in to train, as well as increased the age at which they can join. What I'm proposing now is that we'll double that again. So instead of 305, people will get 605 okay. euro. We're 610, but yeah. also that we expand the college out okay. so that we can actually reach the higher numbers.
Pádraig Tobin, how would you increase the pace of recruitment?
Well, so first of all, the picture that the minister is painting is unrecognisable to most of the people listening to this show. So we know that the number of Gardaí has fallen every year.
Is anything factually she said wrong?
Yeah, well, the number of Gardaí has fallen every year since the Minister for Justice has been minister. We have one of the lowest number of police per capita in the whole of the European Union.
No, we don't actually.
Last year, incredibly, the Australian government recruited net more Gardaí than this government. Now, that is an incredible fact. The reason being, because they're offering better pay terms and conditions and an opportunity to actually own a house. And, you know, more Gardaí are actually being resigning and retiring than ever before. And actually more Gardaí are being injured than ever before. And this is an important issue. Garda welfare is an incredibly important issue. So we brought through a bill last year which would have given a minimum custodial sentence to somebody who injures a Garda while they're on duty. Because in some place in this country, people don't have any fear or worry in relation to Gardaí. We have to mind Garda's backs in terms of making sure that they're safe in relation to this. And I do think there's a particular issue around the Dublin riots, and because this was a this is a low point in terms of this government over the last 5 years. We had our city in flames, we had tens of millions of euros worth of damage, and we had the lives of citizens and Gardaí put at risk at that time. Shortly after that, the minister promised that there will be a fundamental review. I asked in July where that fundamental review was. I got an answer 3 months later saying that she hadn't got the information about the fundamental review and she would send a letter to me when it was published. I've received no letter as of yet.
It's not been published yet.
So the point is, a year later, we don't have
I don't know what the point is. The question was, how would you speed up recruitment?
So first of all, making sure that Garda welfare is protected and also make sure that you provide better pay terms and conditions for Gardaí. The biggest issue is actually pensions at the moment.
So many
Gardaí are saying that the reason why they are no longer remaining in the force is because they have the same pensions as the rest of the public sector, even though their job is radically different than a person sitting at a desk.
You do a separate deal with guards, separate from the rest of the public sector.
Yeah, because like in any job of anybody that's doing work, the demand for that particular role is a key determinant of their income.
Separate deal with them? Yeah,
like here's
separate
the deal
with the defence forces?
Can I just answer this question, right? Because
they're the questions I'm asking. I don't care what question you want to answer. This is the question I'm asking.
I am trying, but like, separate deal in fairness, you need to leave a space between the questions for me to be able to answer, right?
So
the point is here, okay, that when the government employ senior civil servants such as Robert Watt, they will say that the key determinant is the demand for that job in terms of the income that they give to those individuals. But that doesn't seem to be a key determinant in terms of getting Gardaí. And it goes back to your initial question to Helen. Is it the case that in a country of full employment, it's just hard to employ people to work in the Gardaí? Well, it is if you don't pay them.
Dahi, how would you improve recruitment?
Well, the first simple thing is that we've committed in our manifesto to increase the Gardaí trainee allowance to 397 euros a week. But the real issue here is, does whole communities feel abandoned by consecutive governments here? I know at the daily grind of many of our communities who have been marginalised, disadvantaged. I brought the minister out to see some of those communities where people are living in a state of trauma because of drug-related intimidation, intergenerational violence. The same communities can't rely on the Gardaí, not to any fault of the Gardaí themselves because they're under-resourced. We've had a record number of resignations from the Gardaí. This year it's up to 88 resignations of the Gardaí. We need to recruit Gardaí, but more importantly, it's who we're recruiting, who's wearing the boots. We need to resource and adequately fund the community Gardaí to build the bridges with the communities, plus the fact that the international research has shown that those who suffer most from crime are from lower income, marginalised communities. We need to rebuild those communities, make them strong, welcoming communities, and we need to also adequate the resources. Because my final point would be this, that many people are in fear and those same communities are undermined and hollowed out. The public services are still recovering from the austerity of 2008, funding for addiction services. Where I work in an addiction service, I know the struggle with drug addiction and the pain it causes in communities. And there's people, it's life and death situation.
Yeah.
Youth services,
resource centres. How would you recruit those guards though?
Well, first of all, we need to ensure that their pay and standards are improved and to attract them into the force. As I said,
again,
increase the income to make it attractive.
Outside public sector pay
deal.
We would
also, look, let's deal with the Gardaí right now. That's it. That's it.
No, but that's the question. Would you do a deal, a paying conditions deal with the Gardaí?
I am happy
outside the public sector pay deal.
The public sector agreement.
Oh, the whole thing. Okay.
Well, of course, we have to constantly be negotiating with the public sector.
We're saying sector by sector, just to say. We're happy to say that.
Sector by sector, but you're saying reopen the whole thing.
Is that we want to attract Gardaí into the service to build this particularly, but the key thing here is community Gardaí have been hollowed out and undermined by consecutive governments. It's time to rebuild them so that they have a good, decent working relationship with the very communities that they're choosing to police with.
Jim.
Yeah, well, listen, again, we need some honesty about this. In a booming economy, it is extremely difficult to recruit Gardaí in the same way as it's extremely difficult to recruit nurses or teachers. We have to acknowledge that. What can we do to try to get more people into an Garda Síochána? I think, as everyone has stated here, we need to increase the training allowance. We also need to look at something that hasn't been mentioned here. The only route into an Garda Síochána is you go to Temple Mór. Like, we need to think of opening other mechanisms. In most other countries, they have graduate entry programs for people into police forces. We need to look at that here, and that may attract people from different areas. And also, like, we had proposed that we increase the retirement age. The minister did increase the retirement age to 62. I know lots of guards, 62 years of age, who'd be happy to stay on. Why are we getting losing this valuable resource by forcing them to retire at 62? I'd increase it again to 65. There's great guards out there. And also, I think we need to stop the constant negativity. Of course, it is a challenging job, and there are thugs out there who are abusive towards members of an Garda Síochána. But the vast majority of people in this country welcome them, and we're in a fairly unique situation in this country. In most countries, there are certain sections of cities that don't want police force coming in. In Ireland, the big thing is people want to see the Garda Síochána, so that's a really powerful and positive message, and we need to build on that.
Minister, increase the retirement age?
Well, look, I'm the one that's increased it to 62, and I've done that because I sat in. Talk to the Garda Association.
So would you do it again?
If needs be, yes. I mean, we've just increased it to 62. You have to remember that this is an organisation that is active, that is on the ground. There's a lot of things that they have to face and deal with. But can I just point on two things? Pather talks about welfare and well-being of our Gardaí. Every single year that I've been minister, I've sat down with the associations and I've said, firstly, do you need funding or money for welfare, for mental health supports, for any type of resources to help you deal with the fact that you have a very difficult job? And every year money has been provided. I've put body cameras on Gardaí. Why? Because they've told me that the level of aggression has increased. And already in Dublin, in Limerick and in Waterford, where Gardaí have body cameras, they have told me themselves that because they can turn on a camera 2 seconds, that the level of aggression has dropped and actually they've changed behaviours. So people, instead of getting aggressive with Gardaí, have changed their behaviours and it's actually kept them safe in certain instances. Thirdly, I've increased the sentence for assaulting a member from Garda Síochána. Now, we have a separation of powers here. So it's been made very clear that putting minimum sentences is not the appropriate approach. What you need to do
you
is increase...
You can do that. There's nothing stopping you doing. You have a democratic right to create a minimum sentence in relation to somebody spraying acid in a Garda's face.
In terms of Dahi, he said that he invited me out to his community. And it was actually my colleague, Senator Mary Sarah Kearney, has invited me out. But I was only out recently where I have provided funding to your community for many, many projects through the Innovation Fund that I set up. This is a fund that's taking money directly from criminals through the Criminal Assets Bureau and putting it back into communities. And to say that the communities are forgotten, we saw a fabulous project where you had kids coming together with mountain bikes, dirt bikes.
I'm going to come back to Pattern. Funding has never been increased since 2008. It's not just policing. We need a whole of government approach, and that is increasing funding for youth services.
Use your words against you. I didn't interrupt you. You don't interrupt me.
I need to get my point across.
And I said I'd come back to you in a minute so you can make that. But well, you've made it now, so that's the opportunity. Gone. You've done it. Is Jim O'Callaghan right when he says about the need for honesty that in a country with full employment, with the economy being as strong as it is, that regardless of everything you've just mentioned, we're not going to massively increase the rate of recruitment? It's not suddenly going to go through the roof next year.
No, it's not. But I think we have to do everything we can to get it to that point, and we have to be realistic. I'm not talking about recruiting 2,000.
But being realistic is acknowledging that it's going to be slow, isn't it?
It's been slow the last few years because it's taken time to build up that recruitment. So you see when the college was closed in years gone by, Fine Gael reopened it in 2014.
But you think it's going to ramp up?
Well, I think we've gotten to where we are now with the actions that we've taken.
But it's still slow now. Well, it's not where we want it to be.
We've higher numbers than we had. Well, let's be honest here.
The numbers were painfully small. I mean, so to say
but they're higher now. If you have 800 or 900 Gardaí, if we hadn't missed 2 years, you'd have 1,000 Gardaí more than we currently have. And that absolutely has had an impact. I don't think anybody's denied it. We want to increase those numbers. I'm not talking about 1,000 more. I'm talking about 400 more a year. And what we are proposing is not to increase the allowance to 380 odd. It's to increase it to 610 to make sure that the people, and I know that there are people who are not coming into the college because they've mortgages, because they've families. If you give them more funding coming into training, I think that will help make a difference.
Okay, so my understanding is that the government has actually made a promise that there's going to be 6,000 more Gardaí over the next 5 years. So, and this is the major problem is that these promises are so divorced from the reality of people's experience. The only way you can tell the next 5 years of Helen McEntee's work is to look back on the last 5 years of her work and actually see what has been done in that situation. In relation to recruitment, your probably biggest motivating factor in terms of work is probably the pleasure you get out of the work and also the recruitment, the remuneration package that's delivered to you. It's the same for most other human beings in the world. And unless you are competitive in those bases, you're simply not going to recruit. The other point I would say is that there's a lot, you skipped over the Dublin riots issue. It is a disgrace a year later that we don't have that report published, that we don't have recommendations and that we don't have those recommendations implemented. But also rural Ireland is in big trouble. I know in my county, in Helen's county, there's actually about 5 towns which have Garda stations in all but name in reality. They're open for about 4 hours a week. And I'm talking to Gardaí and they're telling me that they're afraid to go on the streets when the pub's empty because the nearest Garda backup is about 40 minutes away and there's no way they're going to get themselves into a situation where they're going to get injured.
Now, just to your point about the Dublin riots, because it's an interesting point. And obviously that's a situation that requires a response, not just from the Gardaí, but from the criminal justice system generally. One thing that stands out here is you look at the riots in the UK, which were in early August. They had about 200 people convicted by the end of August. Now, I'm not making a political point about this. A lot of this is to do with the legal system and in particular...
And resourcing the legal system.
Let me finish the point, will you? And bringing people before the district court on a summary basis. Like, we're doing very well on indictable offences before juries, but we need to get much faster in terms of bringing people before the district court.
We're going to talk about, actually, the justice system and the pace of it after a break, but, Dahi, against my better judgment, going to let you in very quickly.
The other elephant in the living room is emergency services. The staff can't simply afford to live in Dublin. So it's back to the housing crisis again. I know plenty of Gardaí would love to remain in the Gardaí. They can't afford to live in Dublin. The second thing is Sinn Féin are committed to opening up a second college to accelerate the training and recruitment. And it's the same with the firefighters. We don't have enough firefighters in Dublin to drive all the fire engines in Dublin because they simply can't afford to live in Dublin and they're moving into the private sector. And that makes our communities unsafe. And we want safe communities with a full government approach, all government approach, to make our communities resilient, strong, welcoming places.
We'll talk about the justice system briefly after this quick break. Helen McEntee is still with me, as is Jim O'Callaghan, Padraig Tobin and Dahi Doolan. Jim, you kind of touched on it before the break, so I'll start with you. The Law Society, now, it was in advance of the budget, not necessarily with a view to a general election, but they talked about our underfunded and under-resourced justice system needing improvement. How would you improve it?
Well, it does need more resources. Obviously, the whole purpose of funding a justice system is so that the public can see the administration of justice operate effectively. Where we are good in terms of the criminal justice system is in respect to serious offences, murders, serious sexual offences, organised crime. You can see the Gardaí doing great jobs there, identifying them for individuals, bringing them before the Central Criminal Court and convictions coming. However, where we are less successful is the area I identified before the break, which is in terms of those middle range offences that drive people mad, that people think there's no consequence for, and which are to a large extent committed by a small group of repeat offenders. That's what really infuriates people. So we need to look at the system whereby we can speed up that process much more. As I was saying before the break, like, it is ridiculous that we in Britain they're able to bring forward cases after the August riots there by the end of August. Here, I think we had a conviction yesterday and other ones are still going through the courts. Like, I'm surprised that we only now have the Gardaí putting out photographs of people involved in the criminal activity during the riots in Dublin. This is something we don't use at all. Also, we don't have any register of criminal convictions. Like, you go down to the courts, you're perfectly entitled to sit there and find out that Joe Bloggs has a conviction for X. You can't find it anywhere unless you happen to have a journalist in court. So there are areas that I think we need to resource more.
think one of the biggest differences between ourselves and the UK is that in the UK, their police have body cameras. They have access to facial recognition for CCTV. So in a matter of days, when they had their own obviously challenging scenarios in recent months, they were able to put evidence to people and literally say, this is you, and they got guilty pleas, and that's why they had convictions. It has taken Gardaí the entire year in some instances to trawl through thousands of hours of CCTV footage to get what they need to get the convictions. Now, I think everybody was, and I've been careful because obviously there's an appeal potential, you know, the potential for that. But I think everybody was glad to see what happened yesterday. But I mean, we need to make sure that we have body cameras on Gardaí. That's happening. The facial recognition can be used so that that can be done in a matter of hours. But also invest in our courts. I've put 31 new judges in our courts already, and what that's meant: more sittings, more jury trials.
Oh, the Law Society, right before the budget, when they described the system as underfunded and under-resourced.
We need more and more. So the 31 judges is a start. What we've committed to is 20 more. So quicker access to justice can happen when you have the evidence when you have the staff and the resources to be able to deal with it. Well, that's all in train. So what we're proposing is to do more of that.
Just one point, and you know, first of all, is the prison system too. The prison system is currently full. Every year, Helen McEntee's office actually selects criminals to let them out early to make space.
No, I do not, Pat.
Again,
please,
I'll publish this parliamentary question on
You're
my...
You're saying that my office picks people to release them. No,
early,
they do
it does.
Not.
I will publish
no,
it after it this after the show, for sure. And also, there is a significant problem in terms of the number of individuals who are getting multiple convictions and who are not seeing jail time. But the point I want to hear as well is this has to be worked on the other side too. We need investment in areas of disadvantage. There are children in my constituency who are addicted to drugs, but they have no rehabilitation beds for them if they want to come off drugs. There's real difficulties in getting mental health services to young individuals. We need to start investing in like I remember when I was young and in Dublin, I was in a block of flats, and I walked up to the block of flats and I saw a young fellow about 17. He was laid out, his mouth was foaming, he was after taking drugs. A young kid about 7 or 8 years old stepped over him, and it became clear to me that 7 or 8 year old was going to end up in a similar situation as the older boy if there wasn't some kind of intervention. And even on a human basis, if he didn't care about the humanity of the issue, if we don't actually intervene into these communities, we're going to have a situation where there's going to be that massive cost to society in terms of policing and in terms
You made the minister sound like Donald Trump pardoning January 6th rioters there. You're suggesting that she's kind of, her and her department are picking who gets out.
Oh, I will publish this. I will publish this. It is the case where the prisons are so full at the moment that prisoners are getting early release to make space for other prisoners.
It is always the case that you will have a certain amount of release. The minister
Nor
my office. We do not make those decisions.
Are you telling me that the capacity in the prisons is not overcrowded at the moment? Are you saying that prisons in this country do not have excess number of prisoners and are actually putting them 2 and 3 and 4 into?
I won't apologise for the fact that we have more prisoners.
But you're putting two, three, and four into prisons.
We need more prison spaces. That's why we've started a plan to provide again, not just 1,100, 150.
Helen McEntee, if you took the future tense out of this government, you'd have very little to say.
I think one of the issues in the when we talk about justice in the broader sense, prison overcrowding is seldom addressed. As of August 1st this year, the prisons were at capacity 112%, Limerick 136%, Mountjoy 126% for women, 121% for men, Midlands 112%. That is unacceptable, both for staffing and the people in prison. What we need to ensure is capital investment in these prisons to make sure they're humane places and places of rehabilitation. I deal with on a daily basis people who are wrapped up in addiction, and related to that is the violence, the drug-related intimidation, intergenerational trauma that this brings about. If we're serious, if we're really serious about tackling promoting justice and reducing the prison population, invest in rehabilitation. This government and the incoming government, I would make a plea, whoever they are, that they prioritise tackling the causes and consequences of the drugs crisis, which is one of the main contributing factors to prison places and overcrowding.
Assuming
and
you can't
be allowed to go on, because these people
wave a wand and kind of build a prison overnight.
What I said was,
I didn't suggest you said that. What I'm saying is, Listen to my question.
It's a capital programme and investing in
drug rehabilitation. I'm actually going to ask Padraig Tobin instead.
Padraig Tobin,
if you found yourself as Minister for Justice, and assuming you couldn't wave a magic wand and build a prison overnight, and facing the same constraints that the Minister currently faces, would you not see some prisoners released to create space in the system?
I think that prison has, the whole criminal justice system is built as a deterrent, okay? If we do not enforce prison sentences, it does not become a deterrent.
But what would you do facing the same problem that she and the department and
we would capitally
the prison system
we would put
faces?
The capital investment necessary to this. Remember,
I'm just saying, in your first year as Minister for Justice, you're not going to be able to build a prison. So what would you do?
Well, first of all,
we would find
the necessary capacity elsewhere. So, for example,
that's happening, there's
31 Except buildings that have happening. Been bought by Roger Gorman in the last 3 years that are still not being used. And we would look to see get those buildings repurposed in relation to
this. But the government has not invested in services that kept people out of prison.
Prisons should be for violent offenders predominantly, okay? Like, a lot of women are in prison because of shoplifting and issues like that. We've all in the manifesto is committed to considering a women's open prison. We also need to look at mechanisms to help people in retail who are being subjected to repeat offenders, that they can get a barring order maybe against individuals so that they can't go into certain shops in the city centre. That's probably more effective than locking women up.
I'm really in trouble. So listen, I want to thank you all for your time
and
I wish you all the very best of luck.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Easy for me to kind of be the hurler in the ditch. Different thing to put your hat in the ring, so you're all to be commended. Helen McEntee is running in Meath East, Jim O'Callaghan, Dublin Bay South, Padraig Tobin, Meath West, Daithí Doolan, Dublin South Central.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.